Hey, this is Liberty DeVito, and you're listening to the Rock Solid Podcast.
Make me a deal and make it good for me. I won't get full of myself, I can't afford to be. This is small town music, this is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away, a song away, a song away.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis, and joining me today in the Zoom room to promote his just released book called Life, Billy, and the Pursuit of Happiness is legendary drummer Liberty DeVito. How you doing, Liberty?
I'm doing well. Legendary. I love that.
Well, look, it's I don't throw it around. I don't introduce all my guests as legendary, but you know, I feel that you definitely deserve it because,
it's funny, you know, I think about like making all those records and stuff like that. And people talk to you about how they changed their lives and stuff like that. It was like, we're just a bunch of friends in the studio, just doing what we love to do. Who knew?
I love to see pictures of the original Billy Joel band because you guys just look like a gang.
Right. That's what we were. We're like a gang going in. And I even talk about it in the book, how in the early bands that I was in, we were like a gang, but we played music and we fought with music. And if we won a battle of the bands, we took their girls.
I do want to tell you, this just came to me from the publisher yesterday. So I haven't got a chance to read it. So if I do ask you questions that are in the book, please don't take offense to it. It's just, I've leafed through it, but I haven't dug deep yet, but I've been a fan since the beginning. So hopefully I know what I'm talking about.
You know everything already.
Well, I don't know if I know it. I only know what I think I know is what I tell people. So first of all, you got a birthday coming up this week. You're going to be, it's a big one. Can I say it?
If you have to.
70 years old.
Yeah. I used to ask my mother all the time when she was alive. I said, Ma, did you make a mistake on my birth certificate? There's no way.
You look great for 70. How has your age impacted your playing at all? Do you have to change how you play, or do you just still go full out the way you always did?
I go full out. You know, it used to be sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Now it's like 4 Advil and a Snickers bar, and you go for it.
And I imagine if there's a night, if you're, I don't know, in pain, I don't know if that's even ever the case, the adrenaline kicks in and then you feel great.
Oh, yeah. When your endorphins kick in, it's all over. You know, it's like any kind of competition or something. You're running and, you know, your endorphins kick in and you don't feel that anymore. You just don't feel it anymore.
Nope.
And, you know, I have some parts rebuilt, you know, like I got a new right knee, and I do have to wear hearing aids because, you know, the drums made me deaf.
Yeah, you blew them out back in the day.
I was like one of those guys when I was young that I don't need hearing protection, you know, I'm going for it. So, but other than that, you know, I feel great. I walk an hour a day, just, you know, at a fast pace and just to stay in shape.
Stay active. Yeah. Well, you look good. I mean, I hope I look that good when I'm your age.
I hope I look this good when I'm my age.
Where am I talking to you from right now? I'm in Los Angeles. Where are you located?
Brooklyn.
My nephew lives in Brooklyn. And are you quarantining? How are you handling all this lockdown?
Well, they've opened. They haven't opened up restaurants yet. They've set things up on the sidewalk, you know, a restaurant because of social distancing.
Right.
You go to the restaurant and sit outside, but you can't go in the restaurant and eat. Restaurants are delivering or you can pick it up.
Yeah.
But, you know, we got to wear a mask all the time. It's crazy.
It is crazy. And who are you with? Are you with people? You're with family?
My wife and my little daughter. I have 4 daughters, you know, we're all, one turned 40 this year, and then there's 36 and 32, and there's three-year-olds. I'm a three-year-old.
Now, I have 2 daughters, and that's when you know time is passing. You still feel the same, but then you see them getting older, and you're like, oh, yeah, I'm getting older, too.
Exactly. You know, my one daughter, when she turned 40, was like, I'm turning 40, Dad. Can you believe it? No, I can't believe it because I'm getting older too.
you have a, there's a picture in the book of three of your daughters, and I hope I'm not out of line to say that they are beautiful women.
Oh, thank you.
I assume they take after the mom.
Well, I'm glad my wife cheated on me. the little one is in towards the back of the book.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, congratulations on your family, and congratulations for not being alone during the quarantine, because that would be a mess, I would imagine. Before we get into, it would be terrible if you were just by yourself. It'd be awful.
I know a lot of people that are by themselves.
Yeah,
you know,
me too.
Like you're getting phone calls, and it's like, wow, who is this person?
Yeah, they're going crazy. They're going insane.
Yeah.
Before I go way back, the combo that you play with currently is the Slim Kings.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about the Slim Kings, how this came to be and what you guys do.
Well, there's two bands. There's the Slim Kings and there's the Lords of 52nd Street.
Okay, cool.
All right. Lords of 52nd Street is myself, Richie Cannata, and Russell Jabbers. We're all in the original Billy Joel
The original
band.
Billy Joel band.
On that back cover. And, yeah, we got together. We got inducted. We got inducted with the late Doug Stegmaier, who's on that cover too, into the Long Island Music Hall of Fame.
Excellent.
And we were supposed to play one song. We ended up playing five songs, and the crowd reaction was so great that we thought, well, "Let's do this. Let's get together, get some guys to fill in the space, and let's do some music." You know, so we go out. We do all of Billy Joel's stuff. And because we played on it.
Sure.
And we do theaters and stuff, you know, outdoor festivals and stuff like that. I mean, it has almost like stopped dead because of the pandemic.
Exactly. But it'll be back.
Well, we're doing these parking lot gigs now, you know.
Oh, cool.
Theaters and stuff. You know, we got a couple of those lined up. Now, the Slim Kings, every guy that I know that has had success with a band during the 80s, the early 90s, 70s, whatever. When they start a new band, their band sounds like it's classic rock.
Right.
Just like they came out of.
Right.
You know, I did not want that. So I hooked up with these two guys who are in their early 30s, you know, when I first met them, that one was still in his 20s, you know, because I wanted to be the old school guy.
It takes a woman like you to make a man out of me. Show me all the things I'm supposed to be. It takes a man like me to make a woman out of you. Show me all the things you're supposed to do.
You know, today's music has a lot of familiarity to it, to older stuff. You know, like the thing that connects us with the Slim Kings is they'll come in and they'll play me a hip hop tune and they'll say, I want a groove. Like, let's do it, write a song about a groove like this, with a groove like this. And I'll say, that's an old Motown song. That's the Supremes that use that. That's their groove, you know? So that's how we connect right there. You know, they have the fresh ideas. I'm the old school guy.
Yeah.
And I convinced them to record the new album that we have out on tape, you know? So we did it 8-track.
Wow.
It was really vintage gear and everything.
Mixed with mama's blend. Never ending allowance mixed with teenage desires. Breeds expensive habits and some real purebred lies. Purebred lies. But an uptown party's going down. Yeah, an uptown party's going down. Uptown.
it was really cool to get that old school sound. And I really like that. So one band makes money and the other band doesn't.
But both bands are fun.
Both bands are fun to do. Yes.
Now,
both bands are fun.
When you and the Billy Joel band go out, do you need to get Billy's permission at any point to ask if you guys can do that? Or it's not a thing because you guys played on the records?
Well, it's not a thing because we played on the records. But the thing that we had to ask him was, is it okay if we call ourselves the original Billy Joel band?
Okay.
And he said, go for it. You are.
Yes. Okay, excellent.
And, I had met with him in the book because he wrote the foreword.
Mm-hmm.
When I met with him, he said, I keep getting all these reviews sent to me about the Lords of 52nd Street. And they're great, you know, and he feels like if we do something great, it's only good for him, you know.
Yeah, it keeps the music alive. I had the pleasure of seeing you guys. I saw you on Innocent Man tour for the first time. That was the first time I saw you. Then I saw The Bridge and I saw Stormfront. So I've seen you play live and I love drummers, Liberty. My eye always gravitates, of course, to the front person, but then the next person is the drummer. And your playing is so, it's so fun. It's a perfect combination of technique and showmanship. I mean, you are a marvel to watch up there on stage. I love it. You're pounding, you're slamming, but there's some technique there. It's great.
Right, right. This great drum instructor lives on Long Island, and he said to some kid, I overheard him talking, he goes, when Liberty plays, it's kind of like when John Bonham played, every note counts.
Yes.
Everything I counts. You know, it's not no this fluffy, you know,
right,
mashed potato stuff. But it was a lot of fun to do that. You know, I see drummers in drum clinics and they do all this whip stuff and, you know, like crazy fast stuff. So what I say is like, I'm not really a drummer. I just play one on stage. You know, I just make believe I'm one and you're buying it.
You, at the beginning of the book, it starts with a couple sentence quote from you saying that when you go into a drummer's high, do you still get that? Is that a thing?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like when I'm in a studio, you know, I do a lot of recordings for young guys. It's mostly guys that come in, they want to record their songs. They have their home studio at home, but it's not big enough to record live drums.
Right.
So Richie Cannata has a great studio, Cove City, out on Long Island. It's state of the art, like old school, the way we used to record with Billy. And I'll go out there and I'll put drums on it. And I still get that high. I know when it's the right take. You know, I can feel it. And when we play live, I get that, like you said, that adrenaline rush. It just, you know, gets you flying. Yeah. I love it.
And you also said that when you would record a drum part in the studio during the playback, it didn't even feel to you like that was you playing. It was like you were listening to some other person.
Right. Because you're the guy concentrating on the song and you're feeling this whole drum part, but you're not really hearing it. You're feeling it.
Yeah.
You're thinking ahead. When you go back in, you're just sitting there relaxed, listening to it and thinking like, I did that, you know.
Billy Joel wrote the foreword to your book. So you guys have reconnected in a good way. I assume whatever, bygones be bygones would be the best way to.
Yeah.
Now,
yes.
Because I remember a couple years ago, the Hired Gun documentary came out and, Billy was not painted in the best light, but you were just being honest. So if that's the way it's painted, that's the way it's painted. You and Billy have made amends. What about Russell? Have Russell and Billy also made amends or is that still ongoing? And if you don't want to speak for Russell, that's fine too.
No, I they haven't met. They haven't sat down and mm-hmm. talked, but I know that through emails, they've been communicating.
All right. Well, that's good. That's good. Because, at a certain age, I guess you just have to let things go, right?
Well, that's exactly what I said to everybody. You know, I got to a point where I was like, you know, turning 70, and a lot of people that we knew passed away.
Yeah.
And who's sick, who's not, you know. And we're still standing, me and Billy. And like I said before, when I was playing with the Lords, when I played with the Lords and we had to learn the songs again, I fell in love with the tunes again. And all I could think about was what it was like to be in the studio and what it was like to go on the road with those songs.
Right.
So I had that love back. The only thing I didn't have was the guy that I looked at for 30 years, you know, in the studio and live.
Right.
So I wanted that. I thought, this has gone on long enough. This is really dumb.
You know? Right, right.
So it was like time to patch it up. And when I wrote him an email, he wrote back right away and said, yeah, I felt, bad how it ended myself, you know. So
good. Well, good for you guys. I do want to say the three times I saw you live with Billy Joel, killer. The shows were great every single time. I've seen Billy recently, the new band. For me, your drumming, and again, I'm not bad mouthing anyone. That band is serviceable. They do the songs, but the original Billy Joel band and your drumming in particular has this feel and this connection to the songs and to the man singing them. The current touring band doesn't have, and they're never going to have it because you guys created these songs. And
right.
So Billy Joel was great in concert when I saw him 2 years ago. He came out here to Dodger Stadium. It was fantastic, but it wasn't the same fantastic for me as it was with you guys. So
no, the shows now for Billy are you go to a show because it's like nostalgia,
right?
And you hear the rock and roll to me, and it's like people, they don't care who's up there on the stage. They want us to hear that song, and they want to remember where they were the first time they heard that song. You know,
yes,
we built the way we played the original band that's on that back cover. The way we played got Billy to that point.
Right, exactly. Because
to walk out,
yeah,
and do the songs.
Because there were albums before Turnstiles,
right? And
that have good tracks on. They're good albums. But then just something, the switch is clicked from Turnstiles right. on. It's a different thing because, again, when you're, I don't play music. I'm just assuming, like you said, when you're in the studio with guys that are your friends and you're creating this thing together, you guys, you just have this feeling that, hey, it's us against the world and we're doing it.
Right. And got to give credit to Billy because for Street Life Serenader and Piano Man, he was using studio musicians to do the record and taking a different band out on the road.
Yeah.
So there was no the records.
No.
When he came back to New York and he turned down George Martin, Beatle producer, because George wanted to use studio musicians, Billy said, no, I want to use the same guys on the record that are going to go on the road with me. Because he knew that we would play the stuff to death. But, you know.
Right, exactly.
We create the parts. We're playing those parts, seeing the reaction of what we created, you know?
Right.
So those guys that are playing with them now are just, you know, the drummer's just copying what I did.
Exactly.
And hopefully, like Ringo, I didn't leave him a whole lot of room to put himself in there, you know?
Exactly. And another thing is, if the band that makes the album is also touring that album, when you guys are playing live, you guys have a sense of each other. So if you want to stretch out a little bit live, you guys know each other and know these songs so intricately that you can do that.
Yeah, we did. There was times when, I would try something new. I can remember it so well. We're in a Coliseum somewhere, like 15,000 people. And I tried something new in one of the songs.
Okay.
Billy just went up on the microphone and said, what the hell was that? But that's the kind of band we were.
Right.
You know, the blackout. Russell Javis used to black out his teeth with blackjack gum. So when Billy whistled The Stranger, the lights would come on Russell, and Billy would laugh, and he couldn't whistle The Stranger. And we're playing live in front of thousands of people. We'll be right back.
also, credit to Billy Joel. Anyone who's parked behind the piano on stage, it's difficult to be to entertain the way a front man might be that's behind a guitar or who just sings. But Billy was able to somehow get out of behind the piano, even though he was still behind it, you know, and really, right, and really rock. Like I saw Elton John last year, and Elton is fixed to his piano, but and he sounds great and the music's great, but he's not a rock and roller and he's not a performer the way Billy Joel is. I mean, it's really something that you have to hone, and Billy Joel, you know, he knows how to do it.
When we did those tours with Elton, you know, people used to say, well, what's the difference between you and Elton? What's the difference between the two bands? And I would say that Elton's band were better musicians, but we were much better entertainers.
That's a good call. That's a good call. And I'm not going to, you know, you're not belittling yourself as musicians,
no,
but that's a perfect way to put it. And I would agree with you because, yeah, they play everything. Yeah. You know, and it was the guys, Nigel Olsen and Davey Johnstone. Those guys were all there for this last tour, but you guys, just something different.
I mean, that moment of flamboyance.
Sure,
and, you know,
sure.
Dressing like a duck and...
Yes, all that kind of craziness. Kenny Aronoff was on my show a couple years ago, and I'm going to tell... I told him the same thing that I'll tell you. Your drumming, just like Kenny's is to John Mellencamp's music... It is so important and such an intricate part of the sound of those records. And, you know, Billy stopped recording in 93. Mellencamp has continued to record without Kenny. Those records do nothing for me. Nothing. Yeah. Because you and Kenny have something. You have a sound. And, yeah, it just works for those songs and those albums.
It's just a style of playing that we have. It's a free kind of playing. Like, you know that, well, you saw in Hired Gun when Kenny talks about Jack and Diane.
Yeah.
That came like, bam.
Right.
You know, right there. Then he played it. It was like spontaneous. A lot of the beginnings to the songs with Billy, like Allentown and Uptown Girl, I don't remember rehearsing those things. It was spontaneous. This is what I'm going to do, bow, you know, and we take off. It's funny because the first time Kenny heard me play, he was living in Minneapolis, you know, up around there. And we came to do a show, and Kenny came to a show with his wife. And during the show, he told me after we were done, he said, I was sitting there and I turned to my wife and I said, oh my God, this drummer is so great. I love him. And his wife said, of course you do. He plays just like you.
I often wonder how songwriting works, because all the songs are credited words and music by Billy Joel.
Yeah.
But Billy, he didn't write the drum part. He didn't write the bass part. He didn't write, you know what I mean? So it's kind of interesting to me how that works, because the songs would exist without your drum part and without this bass part, but they wouldn't be the way we know them.
Right.
Why do the other musicians not get a writing credit of some type?
Well, because if you notice on Billy Joel albums, there's no arranged by, songs arranged by, unless it's a horn part or a string part.
Okay.
because we did all the arranging in the studio. That's what we did. We made up the drum parts and the bass and guitar and did all that arrangements in the studio. And Billy's first manager, Elizabeth, she told me, she says, I knew what those songs sounded like when he left in the morning. And I heard the difference when he came back at night, you know, but you don't do that because he's signed to the label.
Right.
He's signed to the label. And yes, he would come in and play a song like Just the Way You Are on the piano. And you're like, that's a great song.
I would not leave you in times of trouble. We never could have come this far. I took the good times, I'll take the bad times, I take you just the way you are.
We need to enhance it to make it like a pop record so it's big on the thing. And in all fairness, we were getting a little stipend every time we, you know, the albums would sell a lot.
Okay, well, that's cool to know.
Yeah. So that's the way that kind of worked out. But it was fun. But, you know, he kept us going. He knew how to put that carrot in front of the horse.
These albums, they're not just platinum albums. These are multi-platinum albums. I mean, I don't know. What were you guys feeling when the records were selling for 7-10 million copies of a record that you five friends put together? I mean, that must be an incredible feeling for sure.
You know, it's funny. It's like when I went to that lawsuit that happened, you know, the lawsuit basically was over internet royalties and stuff like that.
Okay.
It wasn't over writer's royalties or anything.
Sure,
like that.
Sure.
Right. It just sounds better that I'm suing for writer's royalties.
Right.
But I had the gold album on the wall of greatest hits, platinum album sales of 1 million. I got a little carried away when we split and I kind of was taking albums and breaking them on the corner of a table, you know. So in the lawsuit, the lawyers said, well, what do you want? Do you want anything else, you know, before we left? And I said, hey, can you replace all my gold albums? I said, sure. So they sent me.
So wait a minute. I'm sorry. I missed that, Liberty. I thought you meant you were just breaking vinyl albums. You were breaking your gold and platinum awards.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Okay, continue. I just wanted to paint a better picture of how you lost your mind for a second.
Yeah. Well, a car pulls up, and they take out these big boxes, which have all the albums. It was like 11 boxes with the albums.
Wow.
So I take the first one I opened is Greatest Hit, Part 1 and 2. And now remember, now I had 1 million copies.
Right.
I take it out, and it says, to Liberty DeVito, recognition of selling 23 million copies.
So then you wanted to just break that one, too.
I was like, all right, put it right back in. Again.
Yeah. Because you might not have realized it. Yeah.
I don't follow thoughts. I don't read the magazines.
Sure.
I'm sure. This is what I call the Sergeant Pepper syndrome, right? When the Beatles came out with Sergeant Pepper, everybody listened to it. I was 17 years old. Everybody listened to Sergeant Pepper and thought they were the hippest people in the world because they knew Sergeant Pepper. Well, the Beatles were done with that. They were already on to whatever was next.
Right.
You know? So I think that's what we do. Once you do the albums and the tour is over, it's like, okay, what are we doing next? You know, you don't like just hang out and go, yeah, I'm great. Look what I did.
Right. Okay, I see. You're looking for the next thing.
Yeah, I took the gold albums off the wall once because I really wasn't moving forward. You know, I didn't want to see them.
Gotcha. Where are they now? Are they displayed now or are they in storage? Where do you have them?
Well, the new ones are in storage because I live in an apartment, a three-bedroom apartment in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And baby's been born. She had to take the room that was the music room.
Okay.
So they're in storage right now.
Cool.
The ones that I didn't break that are from the original batch, there's a there. They're like behind me.
All right, cool.
all there in a plastic bag or something. They're just awards.
You know, it's quite a thing to achieve that. I mean, bands don't sell millions and millions. I mean, there's a few artists, Taylor Swift and people like that. But that kind of music and bands, they don't sell albums like that. Even like the Foo Fighters aren't selling 5 and 6 million albums. That's an incredible feat.
Yeah, well, I think my total with Billy is like 150 million. Like, I don't own the big house. I don't have the big boat. I don't have any of that stuff.
Right.
So I'm just like the same guy that walked in the studio the first day.
Gotcha.
I'm the same guy, except I have my name that is on all those records.
And you know what's funny is that, I just want to mention the original Billy Joel band, just so we do know their names. Liberty DeVito on drums, Doug Stegmeyer on bass, Russell Javers on guitar, Richie Cannata on saxophone and other horn, clarinet. And then eventually David Brown joins on guitars for a while too.
Yes.
You guys are just as important as the E Street Band, but you weren't, like when I go see Bruce, it's Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. When I would go see Billy Joel, it was just Billy Joel. It wasn't Billy Joel and the band didn't have a name.
Because the band we were a bunch of idiots.
You weren't a bunch of idiots.
We did band in the studio one day and said, you know, we got to come up with a name. We should come up with an E Street Band. You know, like, oh, what are we going to call ourselves? The 52nd Street Band or, you know, something like that. It wasn't until Phil called us the Lords of 52nd Street on the credits on the 52nd Street album.
Phil Ramone.
Yes. And that's the name we use now.
Gotcha.
But we didn't use it back then because it was like, we don't want a name. No one liked it. Then we're like Bruce Springsteen in the E Street
Band.
The
E Street Band is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And for me, you guys are just as important to the sound of Billy Joel's music. I think possibly maybe more important. And because you guys aren't called something on any of these albums, you guys won't get that kind of recognition ever in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
You know, I always say this thing too. It's like, Ringo Starr was in a band called The Beatles.
Yes.
I played with a single artist named Billy Joel.
Right.
What I did in the studio for Billy is exactly what Ringo did in the studio for The Beatles. But he was in a band.
Yeah.
So he gets that recognition.
Right.
Where I worked for an artist. That's why I was able to be in Hired Gun and Ringo wasn't.
That's true. Let me ask you this. You've brought Ringo up twice now. There's a picture of you in the book with Ringo's kit from 2018 at a Beatle convention. Is that your guy? Was he always your favorite drummer?
He's the one that made me want to do what I'm doing. You know, in the book I say that I told Ringo, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now. And he said, well, at least you're not blaming me for it. You know. But there was other drummers that kind of knocked him off the stool for a while. Like Dino Danelli from the Rascals. He was like a god drummer to me. He was the one that showed me that the drums could be as much a focus as the lead singer is. He was the one that did that.
Oh, and for sure.
Come on a Piece showed me like how powerful the drums could really be.
From Vanilla Fudge and Rod Stewart and so many things.
Yeah.
His picture's in the book too. You say your guys are still friends.
Carmine. I've known Carmine since I was like 16, 17 years old.
Let me ask you about the book. How did the book come about? Did you want to write a book? Did people come to you asking for your story?
No. I wanted to write down my history for my children.
Okay.
My mom and dad, before they passed away, my dad was 91. My mom was 89 when she passed away. I went and interviewed them on tape, wrote things down. I interviewed my aunts that were still alive at the time.
Oh, that's great.
That family history. But then when I was writing the family history, I thought, you know, I got to include me in here. What happened with me, with Billy and all that kind of stuff. And when I finally got the offer from Hudson Music that they wanted to publish the book, it was really in parts all over the place. You know, we got to group it together, you know, make chapters. And my wife said to me, she goes, you know, if you sell one book, so what? Your kids have a history of what you've done in life, you know? So
that's a good call. She's a smart lady.
she is a smart lady. And fortunately, it's selling more than one book.
Now, is there stuff that you put in the book that as you're writing it, you were like, I don't really want my kids to read this part, but it did happen, so I'm going to put it in?
Well, my kids kind of knew basically a lot of what went on in my life, because most of it's in there. But there was some stuff, like I talked to my sister today, and she read the book, and she said, "Wow, you really took it easy on your second ex-wife." I said, "Yeah, well, you know, why should I throw her under the bus? You get older and you realize that it was half her, half me.
Yeah.
You know, it's all her. You know, I know I was a creep for a while. I was living in a bubble. There was a Billy Joel bubble I was in. But once it popped, I saw everything from a different angle.
And your second ex-wife, do you have children with her?
Yeah, two.
So see, that's the thing. This age, you don't want dad bad mouthing, because that you're still their dad, and that woman is still their mom. And so, you just got, I think you did the right thing. Good for you.
First ex-wife, one child. Second ex-wife, two children. And this wife now, one.
And all girls.
All girls.
That's good. That's how our family is too. And I'll take it.
You're king of the house.
You are king of the house. Did you ever get to meet Ringo? Oh, you did get to meet Ringo, because you just told me. You just told me that.
Play with Paul.
That's right. You've done session work for a bunch of people.
Yep. Paul
being one of them. Meatloaf.
Meatloaf.
Played on Dead Ringer for Love.
Johnstone was playing guitar in those two.
Yes, he was. I feel like I should see your name more as a session drummer, though. You know what I mean? Like, I see a lot of guys on albums, but your name less than I think I should. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, it makes perfect sense, because you wouldn't buy Starlight Express, the soundtrack to Starlight Express.
All right.
You know, we played with Karen Carpenter, and who's the girl that sang... in the Flashdance movie, What a Feeling.
Irene Cara.
Played
Carly Simon, you've played with.
Huh?
You did some session work for Carly Simon.
Carly Simon, John Hyatt.
Okay, cool.
They were on soundtracks for movies and stuff like
gotcha,
that.
Gotcha, I see.
Some of it, you don't get credit on it.
It's right.
Just But I spent most of my time with one guy.
Yeah.
You know, we were making the record.
When you were done being in Billy Joel's band, no bands came calling to get Liberty DeVito in their band?
Oh, yeah, they did.
You just needed a break.
You know, Blue Oyster Cult was the first one to call.
Okay.
So. They're from Long Island, too, you know.
I love those guys.
But being with Billy for 30 years, I had no idea like what the going rate is for a drummer when he gets hired.
Right.
What happens? What do you do? You know, I had no idea. I had to get out of this hole that I fell in. You know, I fell into a hole, and I didn't start getting out until one of the guys from the cymbal company that I was endorsing. He said to me, "You have got to stop saying that you are formerly Billy Joel's drummer, or that you used to play with Billy Joel." No. You are the guy that Billy Joel chose to make those incredible records and those unforgettable tours. That's who you are. That's when I realized, okay, that's cool. Yep, no matter what happens, my name's on that record.
That's for sure.
you know, when the radio stations play it, yeah, that's me playing the drums, you know.
Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. If you Catholic girls start much too late. All sooner or later it comes down to fate. I might as well be the one. Well, they showed you a statue, told you to pray. They built you a temple and locked you away. Ah, but they never told you the price that you pay. The things that you might have done. Only the good die young.
And every time he puts out another album from the past, like he digs stuff out of the vault, yeah, I'm still current. You know, I'm still doing it. I just don't have to play anymore.
So he just wanted you to say the same thing you were saying, but say it in a more positive way.
Exactly.
I want to go through some of the albums. I want to tell you what my favorite Liberty DeVito studio performances are, you know, per each album you played on. And then you can tell me if you agree with my choice, or you can tell me what your favorite performance is on those albums. Also, I want to backtrack for 1 second. Yeah, when a band like Blue Oyster Cult calls for you, and there's no disrespect to Blue Oyster Cult, but you've been touring with Billy Joel, so it's been first class A-list all the way for all those tours, because the album sales never dwindled, so you guys were always top of the charts. So then to hook up with a band and, you know, have everything not be as grand might not be that fun either.
No.
The stage time would be great, but then the other stuff might not be great.
Right. I needed time to get my ducks in order, just to get my together, you know, from what happened to what's going to happen.
Yeah. And it was probably fun to... A little bit of fun to spend. You probably had more time with the family and the kids.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That was good. But, you know, it was still like working out of that hole. Was
tough. I'm sure. Yeah. All right.
The check stop.
Yeah. That's a bummer. That's a big bummer. Are there album residuals though? I mean, do you still get an album residual? You get a session fee or whatever you get paid, and No mailbox money from those albums.
No, I explained it in the book. We were getting bonuses. Every time it sold copies, you get a bonus and stuff like that. But when Billy got screwed by his one of his managers, and he took everything back because he was broke. You know, he got screwed so badly, and he actually said, "I feel like I'm Peter stealing from Paul, but I got to do this." And he stopped those royalties, and. So that ended.
Okay.
What we get now is you get intellectual properties when the songs are played on the radio and stuff, you know.
All right. Well, so something. So I'm going to go through the studio albums, but I just want to add that your drumming on Songs in the Attic and the live album from Russia are just stellar all the way around. Your drumming makes those live albums just, you know, burst through the car speakers. So good.
Okay. I'm saying like this. Why did he pick those two? I think I heard Songs in the Attic twice, and I never listened to the Russian album.
Well, you sound great on it, and I probably have blisters from drumming on the steering wheel of my car listening to those albums. So, bravo. All right, let's move on to Turnstiles, and Billy produced this album himself. Phil Ramone wasn't involved in this album, but I mean. Again, I love this album, but you can't go wrong with Prelude, The Angry Young Man. I mean, you're just killing it on that song.
Yeah, that was a good one. You know, it was put together in pieces, like the beginning, then the body of the song, and then the end. Yeah, I like that one. I like what I play on that record. I also love Summer Holland Falls. That's like my favorite song on that album.
Separate conclusions are the same. Now we are forced to recognize our inhumanity. Our reason coexists with our insanity. And though we choose between reality and madness, it's either sadness or euphoria.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites, too.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So, 1977, this is when it really starts. The Strangers, I assume this is a make-or-break album for Billy. I think it's the fifth one. It's the fifth one. Nowadays, you would not get five albums. You would get one. And if it's not a hit, maybe two, but probably not. So, here we go. Fifth album. You guys aren't matinee idols, so, I mean, you know, they can't really sell posters and stuff of Billy Joel, so the music's gotta be the thing. So Phil Ramone comes in. How important is Phil Ramone to the Stranger album?
Phil Ramone is so important because when Phil came to see us play, it was at Carnegie Hall, and we met with him after the show, and he said, before that, Billy was always getting, like, from producers when somebody would come in or something and we'd be playing, the producer would try to tame us down and just try to, you know, tell us what to do and everything like that. Phil told us, he said, I want you guys to be the rock and roll animals that you are on stage when you come into the studio. That's what I want. He wanted that energy. He honed it into making pop songs, you know, where... there's great songs on Turnstiles.
Sure.
But like maybe Say Goodbye to Hollywood is a pop song, you know, maybe. I mean, you wouldn't hear anything else as a 45.
Right.
So he took us and made us into pop records, you know, like Moving Out and Just the Way You Are. And, you know, there's a live from Carnegie Hall where we're playing Just the Way You Are. And it's totally different than when we got in the studio with Phil. You know, it's more like a Stevie Wonder feel, you know, like You Are the Sunshine of My Life, like that kind of thing.
That you will always be that's forever. And this I promise from the heart. I could not love you any better. I love you just the way you are.
So you guys would sometimes workshop a song live before it was even on a record.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we did that especially with Glass Houses. We were actually in the middle of recording Glass Houses when we went and did the tour, just to see what the reaction of the crowd would be. Well, I think we were doing You May Be Right and Sometimes a Fantasy.
I can't imagine those not going over well, even if people had never heard them before.
Well, you'd be surprised. You know, I mean, in the drum stool and when Stormfront was out and starting, I go to extremes and then seeing the line of people going out to the bathroom.
Oh, my God.
You know, but they weren't familiar with it.
I hate those people that leave the show when they aren't into a song or don't want to give a song a chance.
Right.
Well, for me on The Stranger, one of the high points drum-wise, although I it was hard to pick, Get It Right the First Time is excellent.
I hope that looks dawn to see. I ain't got time for true confessions. Gotta make the move right now. Got to meet that girl somehow. Get it right the first time, that's the main thing. Oh, I can't afford to let it pass. You get it right the next time, that's not the same thing. Oh, gonna make the first time late.
Somebody did a review of Get It Right the First Time at one point, and he says, he sounds like Steve Gadd on 1,000 cups of coffee.
I don't think that's a bad thing.
No, it's not a bad thing at all, because that was my intention, to try to sound like Gadd. You know, because at the time, Phil was all the guys in Scuff, they were all recording, and a lot of those guys play on the Stranger album. Richard T's on it, I think Eric Gell's on it, a bunch of singers, you know. So, yeah, they were the thing in New York City at the time.
So after you record The Stranger, do you guys have any inkling that you have something great here, or does it just feel like another album? Does it feel different? Do you know, before it's released, do you guys really feel like this is great?
No, just like it sounded really good.
Right.
I remember listening to it. When Columbia came in and they had the listening thing in the studio, it was like, okay, that's cool. You know, it's good. It's good. What am I going to say?
Yeah, yeah. It's because it's one of those things you don't know what the public's going to do.
Yeah, we're going to be rich. The first time I actually heard the album in full was me and Phil Ramone. He came on the road with us for the album. And when it finally came out and it was played on the radio, me and him were standing in a kitchen in a hotel, listening to it on a small little radio.
Did it sound good coming through the small radio?
Yeah, it sounded really good.
All right, there you go. Let's move on to 52nd Street. just a year later, which is unbelievable to me. I thought maybe the label would want to milk The Stranger for like a year and a half, 2 years, but you guys come right back the next year with 52nd Street. And the song, I think for me, Stiletto. And there's a part in the middle where the piano and drum, it's almost like a duet back and forth. And then the sax comes in. It's, right. It's perfect for me. I love that song.
She's so good with her stiletto. You don't really mind the pain. You don't mind the pain. Oh, oh, oh.
Yeah, the bass is doing the line that the left hand of the piano does.
And that would be the genius of Doug Stegmeier.
Yes, and I'm doing this thing like whatever I'm doing there. And yeah, that was cool. That was a cool part to do. And then the sax comes in and it just takes off like boom.
Yeah, it's terrific. Is that? Do you have any other favorites from 52nd Street, or did I nail it with my choice?
Well, I like Zanzibar.
That's pretty cool.
Because we got to play like this swing thing in the middle of it and Freddie Hubbard playing trumpet. Are you kidding me? That's insane.
The Billy Joel albums then, each one starts to have its own sound or your different feel. Glass Houses is my favorite. It's because, I don't know, maybe I was 16 when it came out. It's kind of a punky, kind of a new wavy, rocking skinny tie type of an album. And it's always been my favorite. I love I Don't Want to Be Alone Anymore.
So here I am standing waiting in the lobby, sweating bullets in a stupid old suit. And when she sees me, she busts out laughing. You're a sad side, honey, but you look so cute. And I don't want to be alone anymore.
Cool. I love that one. And then Sleeping With The Television On is just slamming. So those are great.
Well, I've been watching you all so night, Diane. Nobody's found a way behind your defense.
them down because you're waiting for somebody good to come on. But you'll be sleeping with the television on.
Those are two good ones. I also like Lena, All for Lena.
Oh yes, it's a
and I do like Close to the Borderline.
Another good one. It was hard
that's
for me
another
to.
One that's similar. Tom Dom in the middle when he does sings the bridge, like the other one we're talking about.
Stiletto, or the, yeah. Okay, cool. All right, excellent. What was it like working with when you went to work with? You've been working with these same guys and been working with Billy Joel, and now you're asked to go over and work with Meatloaf and some other people. Is it fun, or are you like, this isn't how it is with Billy? Do you just adapt? Yeah.
No, it's exciting. It's okay, exciting. Cool. It's like, wow, this is really cool. You know, I was with David Johnstone in the same studio, and it's like everybody was just having fun. That was fun. Those were fun sessions.
Okay, excellent. Good. Good to hear.
Yeah. Yeah.
I presented the question negatively. I didn't mean to do that. Now, I'm pretty sure the next album, 1982, I think I've heard you say this is your favorite album by Billy Joel that you played on Nylon Curtain. Would that be correct?
Yes.
Why is that one your favorite?
It was a tip of the hat to the Beatles, you know. And I think Laura is the closest to the Beatles we got. Oh, I mean, on Glass Houses, there's Through the Long Night.
Yes.
And that's really Beatlesque because it's got that guitar, you know, like, and that song, Through the Long Night, is mixed with the band on one side and the vocal on the other side, like you used to get the stereo mixes of the Beatles songs.
Yeah.
But Glass Houses, the song Laura, when the instrumental part comes in that song and I'm listening to it, I think to myself, am I listening to the Beatles right now, or is this us playing? You know, we really nailed that.
Yeah, Laura's a great one. And where's the orchestra, too, has a little bit of Beatlesque sounding things in there.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
But the song that I chose, and it was a single, and it was a hit, because you and Doug sound so good on it, is Pressure.
Pressure was a good one.
Yeah.
Pressure was a really good one. That one just like, you know, it starts with this mood. It just sets a mood and just takes off, you know, when he goes into the second half of the verse, you know. That's a good one. Yeah, that's why I love that whole album. I mean, Scandinavian Skies is like, whoa, that's our acid song. Yeah. You know?
There's a lot of diversity on Nylon Curtain. There's a lot of texture to it.
Yeah.
But still... it produced big hits, Allentown, Goodnight Saigon, and Pressure. So even when Billy would want to change up the sound a little bit, people accepted it. Now, if an artist wants to take a left turn, people are like, oh, I don't want that. But
right. You
guys were able to step sideways, you know, or out of your lane for a full album, and people were full on in it. That's how popular you guys were back in the day.
And it was just the opposite with the critics. The critics didn't like Stranger Into the Second Street. They loved Nylon Curtain. But the Nylon Curtain didn't sell anywhere near what the Stranger Into the Second Street in glass houses.
I think it sold 2 million. So it's funny, like that takes a dip, but it's still a double platinum album, which is funny when you think of it that way. When Billy would come in with he comes in with the collection of songs for, let's say, Glass Houses. Does he tell you guys, this is the feel I want for this album, or no? You guys just work it out.
Well, first of all, he doesn't come in with a collection of songs.
Okay.
He makes two songs, you know, that he's written, but he's got some ideas.
Okay.
And we'll play them with him, you know, the ideas. And if the ideas swing, he'll go home and write them again. You know, he'll finish writing them. You know, but he's got to make sure that it swings. But, like Glass Houses, his idea was to go back to being a bar band again.
Okay, that makes sense.
Nylon Curtain, he says, I don't want you to even think how you're going to reproduce this live. Whatever has to happen, let it happen in the studio.
Wow, that's cool. That makes sense now when you hear that album. Yes, exactly. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
I remember seeing I either saw an interview or read an interview with Billy Joel. Like they were asking him, where's the box set and where's all the unreleased stuff and all the bonus tracks? And he said, there isn't any. We would write, we had 10 songs. We recorded 10 songs. That's the album done.
Yeah. That's all he wrote.
Yeah.
What here is what he wrote for the album. Not like Bruce that wrote 30 songs for a 12 song album. No.
It's
funny because I did write him the other day and I said, what's left in the vault? You know, there's the Boathouse tapes. That's River of Dreams. The sessions that I did.
Okay.
River of Dreams. And there might be leftover from Songs in the Attic. You know.
Yeah, like expand that out a little bit. But I almost feel like that's more of a genius where you're like, I got 10 songs. That's the album. I got nothing else. And then all those songs are winners because. For me, the Billy Joel catalog is very strong. The albums that you play on, like there's not like one that I skip over. You know what I mean? Other bands, I like a ton of bands, but there's always a track on an album where I'm like, I'm not digging that one. But these albums are so solid top to bottom. This period when you're in the band, it's one of the best, you know, runs of individual albums that I've ever heard. I'm just kissing your ass. That's all I'm doing. But I'm being truthful. Pat yourself in the back. You deserve it. Now, 1983, we got An Innocent Man. This is a whole, this is a whole new, like, I don't even know how you would even, Billy and you guys would even think that people would embrace this. But at that point, you guys don't care. This is what you guys want to do. This is each individual song is like a tribute to the bands that you guys, I guess, grew up with and love, like, you know, the Four Seasons or whoever it would be.
Well, exactly. Four Seasons, Uptown Girls.
Yeah.
She never had a back street guy. I bet her mama
The Drifters, Innocent Man, like James Brown with Easy Money, mm-hmm. you know, all those. That album was probably one of the most fun albums to make because the basic tracks only took 2.5 weeks to do.
Well, it's fun just to listen to. I remember when this came out in 1983, you know, I remember bringing my mom up to my bedroom to play it for her because, you know, I knew that she would, you know, she might not care for Billy Joel, but I knew that she would like these songs because they were like songs that she would have heard when she was a teenager.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because a lot of girls, you know, women liked it because things were dark at that time on the radio, you know, the yeah. bands and stuff. And this was like, everybody was like, this is like a breath of fresh air.
It's a party. It's a fun party.
Yeah.
You're at the sock hop. It's great. But you mentioned Easy Money. That opens the album. And you are killing. I mean, it just, the album opens up with, like, boom, right in your face with Easy yeah. Money. The first thing,
if you ask me, like the top three, I think that would have to be in the top three.
The first thing we hear, I think, is you.
Yeah.
You open the album. It's great. And you needed to open the album like that to get people hooked.
Right.
So good. Okay, good. We're on the same page. 1986, The Bridge. Again, Running on Ice opens the album, and you're killing it.
That was another one that was supposed to be for a movie. You know, Sting was asked to write the song for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So Billy, because Sting couldn't do it, they said they wanted like a Police-esque kind of tune.
Yeah, so I can hear that now that you say that in this song.
Yeah.
You guys get to work with Ray Charles on this album?
Yeah, Baby Grand. But actually, in all honesty, Billy went out to L.A. to do that.
Okay.
Ray wanted his guys.
Okay.
So Vinny Caluta plays the drums on that one.
Oh, okay. I should be better. I should know better, Liberty. I dropped the ball. Really? I dropped the ball.
No, I could have taken the credit for it, say.
You could have. I don't think you would ever have done that.
No.
When you guys are recording, are you guys replaying I'm talking about all the albums. Are you guys always playing live together in the studio? Are there a lot of overdubs or anything?
No, a lot of overdubs live in the studio. Billy singing. Most of the vocals that are on those records is Billy singing at the time.
How difficult were some of those vocals for you guys to do on the Innocent Man album? There's some the great background vocals. There's a lot of high notes.
Well, Billy did all the vocals on For the Longest Time.
Okay.
That's all Billy.
Wow.
But he had some men to do, like the Tell Her About It backgrounds and that kind of stuff.
And then I know in concert for this album, it's hard to, it's hard to hit those notes every night. So, you know, you guys would augment with some background singers, and that's understandable and cool.
For a while, Crystal was doing it.
Crystal.
He would hit the high note for Billy. I am that one.
Crystal, how do you say her last name? Talaferro?
Talaferro.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you guys, Billy stole her from Mellencamp, didn't he? Good for her. Good for you guys. Okay, so the bridge, this ends the Phil Ramone chapter.
Yes.
We go to Stormfront. Why no Phil Ramone?
You can see by the albums, Billy likes to change. He's always changing things up.
Yeah.
Even with members of the band and stuff like that. And so it was time for a different, go in a different direction, you know?
Yeah.
And Stormfront was the one.
And Mick Jones from Foreigner comes in and he co-produces. He had some success producing Van Halen. He was putting it, I think Foreigner was kind of on a break. So he was putting his toe into producing. Was he a fun guy to work with?
Mick, he was cool. Yeah. I mean, I think he was expecting something more from me.
Okay.
And he didn't get it until the Downeaster Alexa. You know, because he always heard me as this really creative drummer, and the songs that we were doing in the beginning didn't really need that much like creativity to create a certain sound of the subject that Billy was singing about until the Downeaster Alexa.
I got bills to pay and children who need clothes. I know there's fish out there, but where God only knows. They say these waters are in what to be. But I got people back online who count on me. So if you see my Downeaster Alexa, and if you work with the rod and the reel, tell my wife I am trolling Atlantis and I still have my hands on the wheel.
Never recorded that. I went back in the control room and he goes, that's the Liberty DeVito I've been waiting for.
But in your mind, you're not doing anything different the whole time. You're still being you. He just wasn't, he was expecting something different.
Yeah. All right. And maybe it was like a roundabout way of saying to Billy, like, why don't you write something that's more creative? I don't know.
Well, Downeaster's probably my favorite song on the album, but the one I picked as far as drumming for you was one you brought up earlier is I Go to Extremes. Because there's some killer drumming on that.
I remember that one, especially at the end, we were listening to one of the takes that we did and it wasn't the take. And Mick did say, he goes, you know, at the end on the tail, when you're fading out there, an English drummer would go to the bell, you know? So it's like, okay, I'll go to the bell.
Because Mick was English. So that's why that's why he's dropping that in your lap. A lot of touring for Stormfront. Fun to all the tours. Were you still having fun on all the tours?
Pretty much, yeah. Still having fun.
And even on Stormfront, you guys, the Billy Joel band has not yet been fractured, so you guys are still out there.
Well, me and David Brown are just there.
You guys were the only guys on Stormfront?
Yes.
Again, I'm just going to hold this up, and people, you got to read the book so you know all the stuff that I'm dropping the ball on. Just you and David Brown, okay.
Yeah.
But he knew, you know, you're so intricate that you have to stick around.
Yeah.
All right. Then we move on. 1993, River of Dreams. You only play on one song.
And it's great.
And it's one of my favorites on the album. And
that's
why. And yeah, and you do, and so there were sessions where you played on a bunch of these songs, is what you just told us a couple minutes ago.
I think I played on probably maybe six or seven tunes that are on there. Mm-hmm. That we did. We did No Man's Land. We did, what else did we do? Shades of Gray, Blonde Over Blue, River of Dreams,
mm-hmm.
that one. There's another one on there. I can't remember the name of it. Something.
Great Wall. Was it Great Wall of China? Is that it?
Okay. That one. Yeah.
So how do you know that you're not in the band anymore? Do you know that you're not going to be touring anymore when you're recording?
At this point, he brings in Danny Crouchmeyer to produce.
Yes.
He tried one by himself, but too much.
Yeah.
So he brings in Danny Crouchmeyer. Danny wants to bring in his own guys.
Okay.
That he's familiar with. Billy never did anything without me. So he figures, okay, I'm gonna try it. This is a good time to do that.
Okay.
But the way the album came out, it was Billy's choice to put Shades of Gray, my Shades of Gray on the record, you know. So, so that's how that worked.
That's out. How that worked out. Okay.
But there wasn't the end, because he called me when he was doing it, and he said, "Yeah, you'll always be my drummer. You know, we're gonna go on the road, but I need to try this."
Okay.
Try.
So at that point, you thought you were
okay. Cool. I was in a win-win situation.
Yeah.
If the bombed. I would say, yeah, see?
Yeah.
I told you, you didn't help me. If it did great, we'd tour forever.
You tour forever, yeah.
Yeah.
But then but the tour didn't happen for you.
No, this tour did. This is the one that had the Elton stuff on
it. Okay, here we go. Here we go. This it's all in the book, yeah. People. Okay.
Read the freaking book, will you?
I just got it last night, I swear. But and I can't wait to read it. But okay, so you weren't on the tour. And what was it?
We did the River of Dreams tour. It was called River of Dreams. So many years. Years. I mean, River of Dreams, when did it come out?
'93. You guys probably toured for 4 years on this, easily.
Well, when did we start with Elton?
Not sure what year that was, but just
Elton.
Whatever this was the last album, so any tours that come after it, you're still touring that album, so to speak.
Okay, so 93, and I left in 2003.
Okay.
So 10 years.
10 years, you're touring that last album.
That last album. Yeah, almost 10 years with Elton, too, yeah.
Now, after that album, Billy announces that he's not going to make any more new music.
No more music.
And for me as a fan, I just thought that means he's going to take an extended break, 4 years, maybe 5 years, and then right back in it. He stuck to that.
Surprise, surprise.
It's unbelievable to me, because if you're a singer-songwriter, your brain doesn't just stop thinking of song ideas. It couldn't possibly, yeah. Right?
Well, you know, the business can be very discouraging.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a big part of it.
You think the business would be so discouraging that it would shut off that part of your brain that you wouldn't even...
Well, that and you're tired of exposing your life.
Okay.
It's everything you're talking about what's going on in this life at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, on the front, if you listen to State of Grace,
yeah,
you know they're splitting up.
You know, Billy even wrote his autobiography and then pulled it at the last minute because he yes. didn't want it all out there.
And then it came out by some guy named Fred something. I don't know what the hell his name was.
You know, I only like an official biography or autobiography. Right. Your book, there's no co-writer on it. It's just listed to you. I have tons of autobiographies where people have a co-writer. These are all your words. You're happy with every single word on every single page.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Me. I mean, people help me, like putting the dots over the all the
sure,
eyes.
Sure, sure. You have a story, an editor.
Yeah. Joe Rosenblatt. Not Joe Rosenblatt. Who did it? Yeah. The editors, mm-hmm. they, apart, the part about my drums, you know, it's comes up to every chapter.
Mm-hmm.
That was one chapter. And it was, really long, so they split it up.
Gotcha. You know? How many pieces are in Liberty DeVito's drum kit? What do you take out on? What would you take out on the road with, let's say, a big Billy Joel tour? What would you be sitting behind?
Oh, right now, let's see. Right now, with the Lords, I play a bass drum. 1, 2, 3 toms up top,
okay,
and 2 on the floor.
That's all you need.
That's it.
When you see a drummer that has a ridiculously crazy kit to where they don't even play half of the drums that you're watching, it's kind of silly.
It is silly. You know, it's funny because I had that set up on the Billy tour, and the sound guys used to call the last tom-tom, the last floor tom, the coffee table. They called it the coffee table because you hardly ever get to it.
Never get to it.
And we had a guitar tech named Chainsaw that used to be under the stage, and had a hot dog roller underneath there and a popcorn machine and all kinds of stuff like that. And sometimes, like during She's Always a Woman to Me, I'd see like a slice of pizza come up on the coffee table, you know, and I could eat during the show.
That's great.
Hot dogs on there.
Well, the drummers I love the most, I'm most impressed with a drummer who just has a simple kit and is getting so much sound out of it. To me, I'm like, well, that guy's the real deal. And again, yeah. For me, that's you. And that's a Kenny Aronoff. Here's a question for you. I'm sure you get asked this all the time. 8 years ago, James Taylor and Carole King went out and they played with the original James Taylor band with Lee Sklar and Danny Korchmar and Waddy Wachtel and Russ Kunkel.
Those guys are out now doing something.
Yeah, those guys are—they're known as the immediate family. It's like what you guys do, but they're recording. They recorded an EP. Great guys. If Billy ever called you guys up and said, "You know what? We're going to do a tour, and I want to do it with you guys again," are you in for that?
If it's with Russell and Richie, yeah.
That's what I mean. I'm talking all the guys. I'm talking.
Oh, yeah.
He wants to do the original Billy Joel band with respect to Doug Stegmeier, who's not with us, but you'd be down for that.
Yeah, David Santos. He did a couple of tours with us on the River of Dreams. Yeah.
Yeah.
Played bass. Yeah.
It's funny. That's exactly what Kenny told me, the same thing. If Mellencamp called and said, I want that original Mellencamp band from the 80s, we're going to tour. Kenny said, oh, yeah, I'm all in. I love that music. Yeah. It'd be nothing better than to play that music.
Sure.
All right. Liberty, let me tell everyone right now, first of all, thank you so much for giving me this time out of your day. I really appreciate it. You were excellent. Exactly how I hoped you would be. Seriously. I love it. The book is out right now. This copy, I ordered a copy from Amazon that hasn't arrived yet. This one came to me from the publisher. I'm going to give this away to one of our listeners. But this is Liberty. It's Life, Billy, and the Pursuit of Happiness by Liberty DeVito, forward by Billy Joel. The forward's very lovely. It's very nice. It's a different Billy Joel than I've even heard in interviews in the past few years. I can tell this is a guy that's settling in to his later years and is comfortable with letting things just roll off his back. When this episode drops, I'll be editing music into the entire episode. Right. Is there a specific Liberty DeVito performance that you would like me to play as our playout song? Difficult, I know.
Yeah.
What would you like?
Well, one of my favorite songs, I think, tells everything in the book is Honesty.
Okay.
You know.
All right. That's the one.
Honesty is a good one because it's like about how so many people aren't honest.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Again, I can't wait to really read the book. I want to thank Andy Gilmartin for setting this up and the people at Hudson Music for releasing this book and sending me this one to give away. Liberty, you stay safe, healthy, and well, you and your family. And if you ever get to LA, I'm going to look you up. I'm going to come see you guys play. Whoever you're playing with, I'm coming. And if I get to Brooklyn, because my nephew lives in Brooklyn, I'm going to search you guys out to see you play also.
Pizza. Come on, we'll go for pizza.
Okay, pizza. That would be a thrill. Thank you so much, Liberty. Take care.
Thanks. We'll see you.
If you search for tenderness, it isn't hard to find. You can have the love you need to live. But if you look for truthfulness, you might just as well be blind. It always seems to be so hard to give. Honesty is such a lonely word. Everyone is so untrue. I can always find someone to say they sympathize if I wear my heart out on my sleeve. But I don't want some pretty face to tell me pretty lies. All I want is someone to believe. Have security until the bitter end. Anyone can comfort me with promises again. I know. When I'm deep inside of me, don't be too concerned. I won't ask for nothing while I'm gone.